Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war.
Welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage. I'm glad you could be with us. Our guest for tonight is another member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Mr. Gary Jones. He's a former officer with the Justice Department and other entities here in the United States.
Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. These men and women have served in the trenches of the drug war as prosecutors, judges, cops, guards, and wardens. They have seen firsthand the utter futility of our policy and now work together to end drug prohibition. Please visit leap.cc.
And with that, I am very proud to bring in our guest for the evening. Gary, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hello, Gary. Glad you could be with us, sir.
You're welcome.
Yes, sir. If you will, tell the folks a little bit about your history in law enforcement.
Well, I started off in Washington, D.C., working at D.C. Department of Correction in Lawton, Virginia, as an officer. I moved back to North Carolina back in '88. Working with North Carolina Department of Correction as an officer and case manager. Then in 1991, I started working with the Federal Bureau of Prison in Goldsboro, North Carolina at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base. And after that, July 1995, I ended up in Tallahassee, Florida as a senior lieutenant working in the prison there.
Well, sir, we certainly have enough Americans in prison, do we not?
We have more than our share.
Yes, sir. Tell us a little bit about that experience. We hear of the abuses that oftentimes go on. Tell us what you experienced during that time.
Well, all the three, the several prisons I just named, I've seen a lot of abuse. And when people say abuse, sometimes people think about more physical abuse. But I've seen a lot of verbal abuse, and I have been in situations where they have been physical abuse. But being a supervisor, I was able to curtail a lot of things that happened on my shift. I just didn't turn and look the other way. I made people responsible for what they had inflicted on inmates.
Well, Gary, as I understand it, it does vary from prison to prison, perhaps even from shift within the prison, which shift is on duty as to what goes on. It's a horrible nightmare for most of these nonviolent drug offenders, I would think. What is your understanding of that situation?
Well, you know, it's definitely horrible. Let me explain. You know, my last institution I worked at was Tallahassee Federal Bureau in Tallahassee, Florida, Federal Bureau of Prison. And that institution housed women. And, you know, the sad thing about housing nonviolent offenders, and, you know, when they come into the system, they have a tendency, the system have a tendency to abuse them. And you coming off the street as a nonviolent offender and wanting to do your time, and then you learn so many different things to do that's illegal that you don't really get rehabilitated. And I have seen that a lot. And it's sad because you're mixed in. Well, mostly when I was in a state prison, you were mixed in with a lot of murderers, rapists, and child molesters. And then you have a tendency to try to get away from things of that nature when you're trying to do your time. And sometimes you get caught up, even in prison, when you don't want to be caught up. And what I mean by getting caught up, you might see things that you don't want to see. You might experience things that you don't want to experience. And that's the sad thing with nonviolent offenders. They might get hurt. You know, some inmates get raped in prison.
Yes, sir. My understanding, the articles I read, the reports I hear, talk about the vast racial disparity on those that are in prison. Let's talk on that, sir.
Oh, definitely. Well, it's no secret that minority, including the blacks, makes up the majority of the prisons. It's no secret. Considering blacks are the third largest minority group in the United States. They used to be the second largest minority group in the United States, but Hispanics is second, now blacks are third. But we represent blacks. When I say we, I mean the blacks represent majority of the population that's incarcerated, mostly for nonviolent offense.
Gary, I don't know if you got a chance to hear our former drug czar, William Bennett, but he made a comment just in the last 24 hours or so that I want to share with you.
One of the arguments in this book, Freakonomics, that they make is that the declining crime rate, you know, this they deal with this hypothesis, that one of the reasons crime is down is that abortion is up.
Well, I don't think that statistic is accurate.
Well, I don't think it is either. I don't think it is either because, first of all, I think there's just too much that you don't know. But I do know that it's true that if you wanted to reduce crime, you could, if that were your sole purpose, you could abort every black baby in this country and your crime rate would go down. That would be an impossible, ridiculous, and morally reprehensible thing to do. But your crime rate would go down.
Now, Gary, were you able to hear that?
Yes, I was able to hear it, and I was able to read it yesterday, and I heard it all over the news. And for someone to make a statement like that is sickening. But he's not the only one that makes statements like that. You know, he's allowed to make statements like this and get away with it.
Well, go ahead, Gary. I'm a white person, and this just chaps my hide. I cannot believe that a person of responsibility, a former drug czar, can say these things.
Yeah, and it bothers me. It bothered me yesterday, you know, when I found out that he made that statement. But that statement is being made, statements like his and statements like other people, that, you know, it bothers me. Just like the article that I read today about it in South Africa, you know, this farmer allowed his one of his workers to be eaten by lions. Fed by lions. But you know it's sad that when you have someone in Bill's predicament to make a bizarre statement like that, and I'm quite sure a lot of other people don't feel that way, but he does have some people that really feel that way. And to be honest with you, I think it's almost sort of like a genocide really on the black race. And I don't really like to play the race card that much. But, you know, with my position with LEAP, when I go out there and I try to recruit people, the first thing I ask, I said, do you think that we're winning the war on drugs? And people say no. I said, do you think it was meant for us to win the war on drugs? And people said no. I said, well, how do you feel about allowing the government to legalize drugs for medical purposes and for whatever purpose they want to, you know, and regulate it and tax it and put the tax money back into the neighborhood that is destroyed. Put the tax money in re-entry program for the inmates that's getting ready to come out back into society, because if you don't have anything for them to do, give them anything to do when they come back into society, if you don't set up some type of program, they're going to go right back to prison. And it's sad that majority of the black people is incarcerated, and their neighborhoods are being destroyed. Their family structure are being destroyed. And whites are incarcerated, too. Don't get me wrong. But majority of the blacks and Hispanics are being incarcerated. They don't even make up the larger percentage of the population. And when I talk for Lee and when I tell people that, 95% of the people agree with me, and they join LEAP. I think we are come to a point in our lives now that we're sick and tired of what the government is doing. Next year will be 20 years for the mandatory minimum and for the so-called war on drugs, but we haven't put a dent in the war on drugs. And I keep reading that, SDEA was, people in position when they wanted to try to stop the drugs coming to this country, they were told not to. And it's sad, and I think people in the United States are really beginning to learn what their government is doing.
I think you're absolutely right. And again, the percentage, it's 90%, it's 95%. I cannot find anyone to come on this show and to refute what we're saying. No one from government at any level, no one within the scientific community. It cannot be done. And yet it continues. It's Gary, what we do, we work to educate people in this regard to hopefully spark that interest to create that bit of just impetus to do something, to write, to call, to visit their congressman.
Right, and I agree with you 100% because I have an organization called Advocate for Justice, and I tell the inmates, because see, they write me, family writes me, mostly my mail comes from inmates, and I tell them, I said, have your family to call, and you also write, and tell your congressman that represents your state that you want to co-sponsor a bill. Like Danny Davis just introduced a bill back in June, is the parole bill. And to allow the parole to come back into the federal system, because the majority of the people I talked to, they said, well, I thought we had parole. As of November 1st, 1987, federal parole was abolished in the federal prison. And not only that, we need, John Conyers got a, he has a bill called 5075, and this reentry program, not only do they want inmates to come out, they want to set up housing for them, they want education, they want the employers to give them tax credits for hiring ex-offenders. And, but the only way these bills are going to get passed, if we have to call our congressmen that represent our state. But I just left the Congressional Black Caucus.
Yes, tell us about that. I'm very interested in that, Gary.
And I talked to a couple of congressmen behind closed doors, as well as talked to a couple of congressmen, in the president and other people. And we had a lot of groups, John Fly, Nora Callahan, Roberta Franklin, most of the same groups that you've seen in Washington, D.C. for the March on Washington for incarcerated inmates was there in the criminal justice. Jesse Jackson was on the panel, too. And we were talking about what's going on. We were talking about these bills. But I get a sense, I was talking to one congressman, I'm not going to mention his name, but I get a sense that they agree with what we have to say, but they are still under the appearance that the American public feels like, where the congressmen feel like they will not get elected because they think that the American public will feel like they are too soft on crime. And they don't want to lose their seat. But they continue to incarcerate first-time nonviolent offenders. And my take on that is, if you still have that same attitude during election time, I'm telling the inmates, you might can't vote, but your family can vote. You need to start voting some of these people out of office. And we need to, correct what we have done wrong.
Absolutely right, Gary. And the point being that those congressmen should pay attention. There were certain instances during this past election cycle where people who were campaigning for drug reform won their district and were elected.
Yeah. And I talked to one congressman, and he made a statement. Well, a couple of elected officials, they voted to bring the parole back, and now they don't have any jobs. And I said, I don't think that way. I think if you continue to be hard on first-time nonviolent offenders, you will not be elected because people are tired of people raping people. Parents are tired of their children being molested. People are tired of being robbed. People are tired of being killed. And then they go off to prison and they get parole. But you have a first-time nonviolent offender, nonviolent, I might say, And they have to do all their time. Ridiculous, 25 years to life, and not even killing, molesting, or doing anything. And the Congress knows this. You know, they can change the law. They make the law, and they can change the law. But people fail to realize how much power Congress has. The president cannot do too much of anything without the Congress approval. And people need to understand, they need, you know, in order for you to get your Congress to act, you got to continue to write and call and let them know how you feel.
That's it. That's the key to it all, is it not? Leap, over 3,000 members now, judges, former congressmen, governors, DAs, lots of people who have been in the trenches and learned that there is a better way. It's ending prohibition. Tell us, please, if you will, your website so folks could learn more there, Gary.
Okay, it's www.advocate4justice.org. And they can reach me at area code 678-358-6587. And my email address is advocateforjustice2004@yahoo.com.
Gary Jones, one of many fine members of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, I thank you so much for being our guest, and we will do this again soon, my friend.
Well, I most certainly thank you for having me, and thank you for putting the information out. And I think, in my heart, I feel like people are beginning to listen. And until we can get those Congress to listen, we got a job on our hands.
Indeed we do, sir.
Until they realize that they will not be elected anymore. You know, that's the only way they're going to learn.
Slowly, we will convince them. Thank you, Gary Jones.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Drug czar of the Americas, John Walters, tells us that marijuana is illegal because it's harmful.
Some of the most dangerous drugs aren't on the street. They're under your sink. Household products kids sniff to get high. Protect your kids. Tell them never to sniff inhalants, because the first time can kill.
A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free Texas and America.
The Partnership for a Drug-Free America is an enormous, fraudulent enterprise. But in this one instance, they did get it right.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects.
Permanent damage to the liver, eyes, bone marrow, heart and blood vessels, convulsions, impaired mental function, neurological damage, kidney damage, irregular heartbeats, unbearable stress, sudden sniffing death. Time's up. The answer, Lucy. Gasoline. There's a vending machine in your neighborhood.
Dr. Leo Sigaroas. I'm the chairman of the Council for Scientific Affairs for the Texas Medical Association. We definitely encourage additional research into the use of medicinal marijuana.
What will it take to motivate? Please visit drugtruth.net.
Then you have housewives and the diet pills. Mom found out there's a lot more than dieting in those pills, man. They help you grind your teeth and feel great, too. Keep on the phone a lot.
Hi, how are you, Mars? Anyway, look at the best fellow.
Where are you going, Mom? Shopping at midnight? Well, they're open. You know, never mind. I'll see you later, man. And athletes? Athletes got into uppers? College athletes? The right wing's last line of defense on campus? And they're doing amphetamines. Remember when being up for the game used to be kind of a spiritual thing? Now, man, you up for the game?
Been up all week, man.
George Carlin, the master. He sees the hypocrisy of the drug war, and he'll be at the Verizon Wireless Theater tomorrow for two shows.
Hi, this is Ed Rosenthal talking to you from California.
Ed, I'm proud of the fact that you've invited me to participate in this year's Wonders of Cannabis Festival out there in San Francisco. Tell the folks a bit about that.
The Wonders of Cannabis Festival is a fair that we're having in the County Fair Building of San Francisco, October 29th and 30th. Features many speakers, including Tommy Chong, Rick Steves, Tony Serra, myself, Jack Herra. It's going to be a really festive occasion, and it's going to celebrate all cannabis in all of its aspects.
Ed, as many of our listeners know, marijuana is used as a sacrament, as a medicine, and truthfully, as a proper recreational device.
That's right. And we're going to have videos and films, hands-on demonstrations. We have a whole legal we have legal seminars, medical seminars, and we're looking at it not only in its recreational and medical aspects, but also in its industrial and fashion aspects as well, and food too. It's just such a wonderful plant that it deserves its own celebration.
Well, that's true, Ed. Everything from clothing to siding for a house, I hear it lasts longer than lumber even.
Well, it's an incredible building material, and it has different properties that a few other fibers have, and it can be integrated into modern industrial America. That's what we'd like to see happen.
Well, all right, Ed, let's tell them when that is and how they might participate if they're on the West Coast.
Okay, the Wonders of Cannabis Festival is being held October 29th and 30th in the County Fair Building at 9th Avenue and Lincoln Street in San Francisco. That's right in Golden Gate Park. It's an indoor event. For more information, you can look on the internet at simply wondersofcannabis.com, and you'll see all of the events that we have and the speakers, and it's just going to be great. And Dean, we're really proud that you're coming to our festival, because you've done so much for the cannabis movement, and you have so much to say, and you have such great insights. So we're looking forward to seeing you there.
Ed, I thank you so much for that thought and for the invitation. And as a San Franciscan, because I was born there back in 1948, I'm always proud to come back to my hometown.
Yes, well, we're going to have to grab you back here. Bring you back.
Listen to this. September 28, 2005, CBS Chicago reported that 16 gang members were indicted for drugs and murders. The 16 members of the Insane Deuces street gang operated a tightly structured network in Chicago to deal drugs and to protect their turf with violence, according to federal prosecutors. Each defendant faces one racketeering conspiracy charge that includes acts of murder, attempted murder, robbery, witness tampering, and drug dealing. 12 face separate charges for dealing cocaine, crack, and marijuana. According to Andy Anderson, assistant special agent in charge for the BATF, gangs, increasingly, are spreading to Chicago's suburbs for fresh drug markets and to recruit new members. So you see, the violence surrounding drugs is very real, and the drug laws will help prosecute these criminals. In a way, when you advocate drug legalization, you run to the defense of these men. Think about it. This has been Winston Francis with the official Government Truth.
This is Phil Jackson with another Black perspective on the drug war. Here's a riddle for you. Why is the drug war like Hurricane Katrina? Because they both show up the disconnect between the hearts of the American people and the institutions they rely on to serve them. When thousands of poor, mostly black people, were left homeless by the storm, the people of America responded with a huge outpouring of support. The American Red Cross alone took in over $1 billion in donations. But for some reason, instead of the effective, holistic assistance these people need to get back on their feet, they get short-term Band-Aid help. So, too, the drug war does not deliver the effective and compassionate solutions that Americans need to free us from the crime, killing, and illness of the illegal drug trade. Instead, our drug warriors give us mass incarceration that tear families apart and deepens poverty, expanded police powers that endanger our civil liberties, nonsensical laws that keep safe and effective medications from sick and suffering people. Get tough mandatory minimum sentences that pack the prisons with nonviolent drug users, while the importers, distributors, and money-laundering bankers get to walk free. And instead of equal justice, we have disparate penalties for the same offense that guarantees the weight of this war will fall disproportionately on the poor, the black, and the brown. Unlike Katrina, however, which blew in, did its damage, and left, the drug war persists, and prohibition continues to be a Class 5 disaster as its ill winds blow across all 50 states and around the globe. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Phil Jackson.
Happygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
Over the course of the last 2 years of U.S. occupation, Afghanistan has consistently produced over a ton of illegal heroin per day. The U.S.-Afghan drug trade is now responsible for 90% of black market heroin worldwide and 60% of the Afghan economy. According to the Christian Science Monitor, drug money now permeates the U.S.-backed Karzai government, quote, at the highest levels. Additionally, we know Al-Qaeda's dominant source of funding is from narcotics, a Pentagon advisor has reported to the British Herald. Bin Laden's personal security and survival depends on the drug proceeds. This week, the Afghan Interior Minister, Ali Ahmad Jalali, unexpectedly resigned in apparent protest over official links to the illegal opium trade. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
A major disruption occurred in the ranks of the drug warriors this week. Representative Mark Souder, Republican of Indiana and a leading congressional drug war zealot, called for the resignation of David N. Murray, a top aide to the drug czar. Murray is the source of much of the misinformation and distortions now coming out of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. When he went to work for John Walters years ago, Murray was already well established as a conservative apologist for the drug war. Murray may be most famous for framing the administration's arguments against needle exchanges. Those arguments may also have led to his downfall. Earlier this year, the Washington Post investigated several of Murray's claims about research into needle exchanges and found them to be absolutely false. The Post was so moved that it published an editorial calling on the Bush administration to drop its opposition to needle exchanges. They did not call Murray out by name, but anyone following the topic knew the score. Souder stopped short of calling for Walters' resignation. Souder agrees with Walters on policies for the most part. Murray is merely the functionary caught fabricating arguments to justify those policies. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org.
America sleeps well knowing that the drug war protects their children from drugs. Yet children have easier access to drugs than alcohol or tobacco. Politicians work hard, spending ever more money to crush the black market. And yet, each year we give $500 billion to terrorists, cartels, and criminals to buy bigger weapons to kill us. The drug czar tries to ensure that fewer people die from using hard drugs, yet each year aspirin kills more people than do all hard drugs combined. The unvarnished truth is at drugtruth.net.
I do want to thank Gary Jones, and again, he's one of very 3,000 very bold and courageous individuals who stand for the truth. There is no one in government who's willing to come on this show, who's willing to discuss the fact that they got nothing in their basket. They're walking around crying danger and fear. And yet it is their policy that creates the very danger and fear they warn us about. I tell you what, it's up to you to make the difference. It's up to you to make the phone calls, as we were talking about with Gary. It's up to you to write a letter. You can email it to your congressman. You can send it to your senator in a local newspaper. You can share it with your mayor and your city council. You can dare to stand for the truth, because without that, we're all pretty well lost. I guess, my friends, it's time to wrap it up. And as always, I remind you, because of drug prohibition, you really don't know what's in that bag. And I urge you to please be careful.
To the Drug Truth Network listeners around the world, on behalf of engineer Philip Guffey, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage and the Unvarnished Truth. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Tap dancing on the edge of cannabis.